the best in the world.
I've been the best ever since day one. On this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. And trust me when I tell you, I am the hottest property in this industry today. Nobody can touch me. The only thing that's real is me, day in and day out. I am the best in the world. Do I have everybody's attention now?
What up, people? I said, what up, people? Welcome to another edition of the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph podcast, featuring the one and only Mike Steph, best in the world at what he does. Yes, man. I am back this week. I am back for the first of my two episodes. Still on the road to episode 50 and the concurrent road to 200. I've been blessing y'all with two episodes a week for the last 3 weeks. So technically, I've been giving y'all, this would be episode number 5 or 6 in the last 3 weeks. And this week, the reason why you're getting two episodes is very simple, because there's two nights of WrestleMania. I'm going to get to the shits right now. This week will be wrestling centric. This week will be all about WWE WrestleMania 40. WrestleMania Saturday happened last night. WrestleMania Sunday happens tonight. And being the fact that y'all probably all chose to choose and watch and listen to the rest, I'm coming a day later than everybody else so I can give y'all the absolute best that I have to offer. Absolute best recap that you'll probably get this whole weekend, because you want to know why? You want to know why? Because it's coming from me. It's coming from me.
Fuck that!
Clear, guys.
Fuck that! You shut your mouth. Doesn't mean that this shit stops. The rat doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, you heard him. Fuck that! Fuck that! Shit don't stop. Mike Steph don't give a fuck about anybody else that's not in my immediate circle, but neither here nor there. I am going to give you my recap of WrestleMania Saturday, WrestleMania Night 1, which had some ups and downs, more ups than downs, and I'm not going to give y'all the minutiae of all 7 matches. No, 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 no. I will give y'all my thoughts on the matches. I will give y'all my feelings on the matches, and I will actually end this episode with predictions for tonight's WrestleMania Night 2, WrestleMania Sunday, which the recap of WrestleMania Sunday will be tomorrow on the day after WrestleMania Monday. Yeah, how about that? So last night was very, very interesting. I'm not going to be too long-winded on the intro because we got a lot of things to cover. I want to get in and get out. So to give the masses, that's right, both my dozens and dozens of Mike Steph listeners and the unwashed masses enough time to actually imbibe what I'm giving y'all and to digest what I'm giving y'all and also give y'all enough time to get yourself prepared for WrestleMania. Unlike myself last night, which I decided to wait until the very last minute to go get my goodies for me and Main Event K, you know, because WrestleMania is like the Super Bowl of wrestling for us. So, of course, the Super Bowl, I get my goodies, I get my wings, I get my fries, I get my cake, I get all my goodies. This year, well, last night I said, you know what? I'm going to do the same. But I got off to a late start, and pretty much the majority of my time I was spent watching the Rhea Ripley Becky Lynch match was going in and out of the living room to the kitchen, back to the living room, preparing my food. So I wasn't actually ready to sit and enjoy the festivities until midway through that match. There will not be a repeat of that. There will not be a repeat. So, like I said, I'm going to get this shit on the road. This will not be a two-hour extravaganza. Shit, I'm going to try to make sure it's not an hour extravaganza, because I think, based on what happened in night one, I think night two is going to give us a little bit more meat on the bone. So, with all that...
Fuck that!
Clear, guys.
Fuck that! You shut your mouth. Doesn't mean that this shit stops. The Rock doesn't give a fuck.
Okay, Rock. Damn. He gets a little victory last night, and now he want to talk shit on my podcast? Not understanding that he's talking to the around the way guy? Yeah, that's right. The around the way guy? And you want to know why I'm the around the way guy? Because I'm repping the around the way girl. That's right. I know. I want a girl with extensions in the ear. Bamboo earrings, at least two pair. A Fendi bag and a bad attitude. It's all it takes to get me in a good mood. She could walk with a switch and talk a sweet slang. I love when a woman ain't scared to do a thing. Standing at the bus stop, sucking on a lollipop. Once you get pumping, it's hard to make the hottie stop. She like to dance to the street jams. Sweet as brown sugar with the candy yams. Honey-coated complexion. Use a Camay. Let's hear it for the girl. She from around the way. I need an around the way, ooh, around the way. She's the one for me, Mrs. Ooh. I need an around the way, ooh, ooh, ooh. She's the one for me. Yeah, but in this case, we're going to talk about Bianca. So I think I done busted enough eardrums, so let's get this show on the road. Without further ado, good night and goodbye. You know, normally I do these in chronological order, you know, first match to last match. But like I said, the dick is long, but the time is short. So I'm going to get to the main event and work my way backwards. As you can see on your screen for all my YouTube viewers, The Rock and Roman Reigns reign victorious over their defeat of Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins in the main event. This match lasted 45 minutes, but the whole segment lasted about an hour, which is to be expected. The entrances themselves went for about 20-25 minutes. But the elaborate entrances of not only Cody Rhodes, adrenaline in my soul, the final boss, The Rock, and Roman Reigns itself, it's going to take up about 15 minutes. Then you got the elaborate, of Seth Rollins playing off of his wife's entrance. Actually, if you think about it, their interests are very similar. Whoa! Oh! 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 It's like a remix. And not only was that, did that come to my mind, actually, literally, their entrance wardrobe was the same. Becky pretty much had like almost like a wedding dress attachment to her garb, and Seth Rollins kind of had a wedding dress attachment to his garb. But neither here nor there. You know, no judgment zone. Let's get back to the task at hand. This hour-long epic started out slow. Yes, it did. But it ended up with these two. Yes, that's right. There's a reason why The Rock has a belt and Roman has a belt. I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. The Rock got that belt handed to him in the Hall of Fame ceremony by the family of Muhammad Ali for being the one and only people's champion. Like I said, I get it. So it was an honor. But to me, and this is my feeling, to each his own, to me, don't y'all think that might kind of undercut the tribal chief? I mean, the tribal chief is the legitimate champion, right? Think about it. The tribal chief is the undisputed universal champion. And he's been that for close to 4 years, for close to 1,400 days, correct? And then on the biggest stage of all, in the self-proclaimed biggest tag team match, biggest main event of all time, you have The Rock coming with his championship, his belt, to pretty much make sure that he was on equal footing as the tribal chief. I don't know. Maybe that's something that can be brought up when the eventual breakup happens. I don't know. To me, those are red herrings. I said to Brad Winchester of Gimmick Infringement, because we was chatting back and forth throughout, and I asked him, yo, what the fuck The Rock got a belt for? And he reminded me of what happened at the Hall of Fame. I'm like, oh, I must have forgot that. I must have missed that part. Because I'm like, yo, why the hell? Neither here nor there. I didn't spend too much time on that. But that is a situation to keep attention on. What this victory means is that the main event of tonight, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes, will be contested under bloodline rules. And you know what bloodline rules mean? It means there are no rules. And what happened last night, technically, was a taste, just a taste of what you can come to expect tonight in the main event on bloodline rules. The Rock throwing his power around. The Rock telling the ref when he was counting, when they was outside the ring, stop that fucking count before I fire your ass. Darn, that was reminiscent of He Who Shall Not Be Named. A little corporate Rock came out there. Now, I wrote notes down as they were going on so you can get the full feeling that I was feeling when I was watching this epic main event. So yeah, if my eyes divert, if my eye dart, no, I'm not nervous. No, I'm not looking over my shoulder. No, I'm not afraid that the final boys are gonna come in here and whoop my ass. No, 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 no. You know why? You wanna know why he would not come out here and whip my ass? Because this is how I feel.
Fuck that!
Clear, guys.
Fuck that! You shut your mouth. Doesn't mean that this shit stops. The Rock doesn't give a fuck.
And neither do I. Neither do I. So, the main event, had an epic feel. Pat McAfee, throughout the night, was on one, but especially, he saved his most acerbic comments for this main event. Roman came out and he was ripped that he's ever been. Like, McAfee said upon the entrance that the tribal chief looks to be in the best shape of his career. I mean, we don't know what he was working with after all those years of the tactical guard. And when he first took the tactical guard, you could tell, you know, he was up there. But I'm not going to lie, you know, listen. He was getting a little flabby. He was getting a little soft in the waist. He was on some, yo, I'm here and I wrestle about once every 5 months. Listen, I'm the tribal chief. Y'all motherfuckers can't beat me. Listen, I got the tan. I got the beard. You know, a little dye jaw because he was going gray like a mother effer. You know, so listen, I get it. You know, maybe he was sharing some vitamins with his cousin. I don't know. You know, prays together, betrays together, indulges together. You know all those family terms. Now, also one match in the last 5 months that can't hurt either. Paul Heyman kissing the hand of the final boss right before the beginning of the match was chef kiss. Because think about it. His duty is to his tribal chief. He has never shown any type of allegiance to anybody else besides his tribal chief. And he kissed the hand. He kissed the ring, so to speak, of the final boss. Once again, these are red herrings. Paul Heyman does not do things just on a whim. Everything has a meaning. Like, Seth came out with the red and dress inspired robe, which was nuts. Michael Cole actually put out there that The Rock might have overshadowed Roman since his return. Cole was excellent last night. Cole really showed his aptitude for laying the backstory down and actually getting all the key parts that might have been scrambled around and jumbled around over the last month and a half since they had to pivot over what they thought they were going to do. And The Rock said, look, we could have ran with what we wanted, but we took, you know, the fans' input and said, you know what? We could do this with resistance, or we could do this, make a pivot, and maybe even make it bigger and better than it initially was. And that's what they chose to do. Michael Cole saying that The Rock has been throwing his weight around, and he came back, and he's on the TKO board, and he wanted to Bogart his way into the WrestleMania main event, and pretty much he took Cody's spot until Cody decided to make a stand for himself and demanded that he get his just desserts. Excuse me, I'm working myself up here. That's something that probably would have been ignored and past errors. But no, not this era, not the Triple H era, as Cole has named it, the Paul Levesque era. But a lot of narrative, to be blunt, was being created by the commentary. Now, Roman started off, The Rock faced Seth in his first action. When he entered the ring, he faced Seth, and Seth played babyface in peril for the majority of the first half of the match. first half of the match, like I said, was very slow. You could tell by the fact that they were doing headlocks and reversals or attempts of reversals and everything that they were in for the long haul. Which you would have thought that would be a detriment to The Rock, but The Rock, I'll give the devil his due. He more than held his own. He wasn't gasping for air. He got himself in exquisite shape. And the way the match was laid out in a way that Paul Heyman special. Accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. The way Roman Reigns maps out his matches, get optimum value for limited activity. And that's not a knock, because you know the old saying, work smarter, not harder. And Roman, if he's going on almost four years as the champion doing this style, he said in the press conference after, he said, listen, this all originated from the year 2020. From before they got into the Thunderdome, he had, I won't say the luxury of being back, because he was preparing himself. He was protecting himself from the unknown, which was, you know, the pandemic. And he said he had the luxury of sitting back and watching from as a viewer, and realized that everybody was still doing it the same way, as if things didn't change, as if there was still a crowd that they had to feed off of, that they had to interact with. And he said, no, we have a chance to move this forward. We have a chance to change the industry. We have a chance to actually have our voice be heard, for us to actually create the narrative, create the creative structure, if you will. And we use that to our advantage to really weave the story that we're trying to portray. And that was at play tonight in ways that married the two. It married the athleticism of Seth Rollins, the babyface in peril, or the babyface fire of Cody Rhodes, the slow, methodical nature of the tribal chief Roman Reigns, and The Rock getting his feet wet after almost 12 years of meaningful action. First time in 12 years he's had meaningful action. Another back and forth that Cole and McAfee had. Cole was saying, well, you know, The Rock hasn't had a match in 12 years. You know, the rust is off. You know, not counting, you know, he had a 6-second squash of Eric Rowan. And McAfee rightfully so said, whoa, why should that be held against him that, okay, 4 years on the shelf, he came back, he squashed somebody in 6 seconds. To me, that's more impressive than if he would have went an hour with, you know, with whatever competition would be at his disposal, which, once again, great point. Now, the story of this match was this. Matter of fact, The Rock told the referee that if he counts, he's fucking fired. That led to loosened rules for the rest of the match. This was more walk and brawl, back to the 90s, back to the quote-unquote attitude era, in which they went into the stands, went outside the ring, and they paired off, and pretty much it was a walk and brawl city, I said. I noticed that very early, that Seth and The Rock paired off almost in an effort to save the interaction between The Rock and Cody for later. Not only later in this match, but later down the line when you know there's going to be a one-on-one match with them. The story later in the match was a tweaked knee by Seth that will assuredly come into play for tonight's title defense against Drew McIntyre, who is conspicuously absent. But at the same time, all he's doing is sitting back, probably sitting back looking at the monitor, licking his chops, as was said numerous times in commentary. Excuse me, because my laptop is about to die. And it made perfect sense. Why am I going to come out and put myself in harm's way when this idiot, Seth Rollins, stuck his nose in something that had nothing to do with him, wanted to be Mr. Righteous, and guess what? He's going to fuck around and get hurt, and he's going to be easy pickings for me, the Scottish psychopath. And kudos to him. Seth had taken the brunt of the beating while Cody, during the Heat segment, seemed neutered. Because, yes, I know, if the rules are relaxed and you had Roman and The Rock pulling every trick from under his sleeve to keep the 2-on-1 advantage, 2-on-1 advantage with Seth, why did Cody look like he was glued to the corner? Every time it looked like he was too close, like, oh, let me get the tag rope. Like, personally, if I was Seth, I'd be pissed the shit at Cody. Especially if I'm messing around, got hurt, and Drew trounces my ass, and then at the end of the night, you begin your reign of glory? Guess what? Me and you got beef, motherfucker. Me and you got beef. I best to get a title shot. I shouldn't have to ask for nothing. And if I don't, I'm going to go back. It's going to be on site as it was when you first came back. Like, help me. Because I'm in this because I had your back. If I was Seth, that's the mindset I'm getting. And you acting like you helpless? To me, that was a bad look on Cody Rhodes' part. Something, again, that I'm quite sure will be held, that would be revisited down the line. The Rock using his power as part of the TKO board to advantage Mr. Johnson, if you will, was once again a chef kiss. Cody was finally in and the crowd went wild. Yeah. There's a lot of mixed chants. Because as much as dastardly as The Rock has been in his return, he's still The Rock. He still holds enough cachet that everybody knows that, yeah, we're going to have fun booing your ass. We're going to have fun saying, ooh, darn, that kind of hit close to home. But at the end of the day, The Rock is The Rock. Cody doesn't have almost 30 years of equity in the bank. Now, Roman got his nose busted, I think, either by the disaster kick or when the Cody cutters off the rope. Roman did like this. He saw the blood on his nose, and he got pissed. Roman was dead to rights when The Rock pulled the ref out to save the winning pinfall. A low blow to Cody, and Cody kicked out. The deck was stacked. Now, The Rock pulled out the weight belt. That's it, Cody's mama. And with Cody's blood on the belt. And The Rock told Cody's mom to sit down before the blood on this belt would be yours. To go along with the blood from your son, from your bitch ass son. Now, he didn't say bitch ass, I said it. Disrespectful, but entertaining nevertheless. The people's elbow was counted by Cody Cutter. The boos weren't apparent. And this is something that in the lead up, a lot of people were saying, Philly is one of the cities that will give two fucks about booing Cody. In immortal words of The Rock, they give a fuck about his story. when it comes to The Rock. Now, Roman had a Superman punch to Cody to save The Rock. Roman speared The Rock by mistake, and Seth takes out Roman. And then Cody and Seth hit The Rock and Roman with double pedigrees. Kick out by the Bloodline. Cody with a rock bottom to The Rock through the table. Roman speared Seth through the barricade. And in a call back to last year, Cody hits not one crossroads on Roman, not two crossroads on Roman, but he goes for the third one. And when he went for the third one, he got too close to the ropes and he got whipped by The Rock. And that enabled Roman to tag The Rock. The Rock gave Cody the rock bottom, followed it up with the people's elbow, and got pinned by The Rock. 1, 2, 3. Bloodline rules are in effect for tonight's main event. Seth Rollins was never seen again after the barricade spot until the very end of the match. Matter of fact, the conclusion of the match, with this look on his face of, I'm fucked. I'm hurt. I'm tired. Got my ass bust. And I have to defend my title tomorrow night. Cody, on the other hand, matter of fact, not on the other hand, Cody had the exact same look on his face that he had last year when he failed to quote unquote finish his story. Was that a coincidence? I think not. Now, the only question is, will it be a trifecta of pitches with that far away, spaced out look of what the hell did I get myself into? Or can I ever beat this man? Now I got the Bloodline rules tomorrow. Do I have any backup? Do I have any aces in the hole? It's been a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors and innuendo that he's going to have the cavalry. Perhaps Stone Cold is going to make an appearance to rehash their match from, what, 25 years ago against The Rock in the City of Brotherly Love. Is John Cena going to make an appearance to try to neutralize The Rock and make it a one-on-one event? Will there be new addition to the Bloodline? Will Tama Tonga appear? Will Jacob Fatu appear? Everybody knows Solo going to appear. Everybody know Jimmy going to appear. Jay going to come out and try to neutralize Jimmy. Who's going to neutralize Solo? Who knows? But like I said, will Seth feel away when he loses based on his condition to this from this match? The main event embodied everything you needed to do going into tonight. The struggle of Cody, with hints of him having Roman's number, but the power of The Rock being abused, Seth's injury and desire to win, putting himself in jeopardy tomorrow for the defeat at the hands of Drew McIntyre. The Rock pinned Cody. Cody now faces Bloodline rules. The match overall was good at the end. It was long, but that was to be expected. The Rock was going to get his shine. So, like, it was what it was. It was a true capper of the night. And, fuck it. Out of 5 soul shakers, I'll give the match as a whole drama, work rate, implications, storyline. Give it 4.5 soul shakers. Yeah, that's right. I said 4.5 soul shakers. You're going to do about it. The next match on this review was the women's world title match between the Eradicator, Rhea Ripley, and the man, Becky Lynch. Back-to-back years, Rhea has beaten a horsewoman. I wonder where they got that template from. I just wonder where they got that template from. You know, I mean, it seems like the kind of playbook that they're reading from seems kind of familiar. You know, Miss Belair, maybe, perhaps, retaining in her first year to date, reign at WrestleMania. I wonder where they got that from. Check that box too. The match was good. But for some reason, the way the lead up to this event made me feel, it made me feel confident that Rhea was going to retain. Rhea has so much momentum, and I know they're finding it very, very hard to keep her as a face. Especially once they let the cat out the bag at Elimination Chamber and allowed her to actually be the conquering hero, allow her to be the face in front of her home country. I won't say that did more harm than good, but she was able to keep her edge, but also able to ride the wave and not go against it. There's a lot of questions. There's a lot of thoughts that I have when it comes to how Rhea is getting her push as opposed to Bianca, but I'll say that for later if I get around to it. But I'll concentrate on this match right now. The reason why I felt the closer they came to the event that Rhea was going to retain is Becky's been there, done that. To have Becky win would be effectively cutting off Rhea's legs once again. It took, if you want to think about it, it's taken 4 years for Rhea to get to this point. Everybody thought in 2020 against Charlotte for actually the NXT championship that she should have won. Charlotte won, and not only did she win, she didn't put it back over. And that led to a spiral for Rhea to kind of try to figure herself out. Who the hell is she? And up until now, last year's match, to tell you the truth, I'm not going to lie, quiet is kept. And this might not be popular, or it might be popular. Last year's match against Charlotte was way better than this year's match. And yeah. I know. Becky was fighting the last couple of days of 102 temperature. Becky had strep throat. Becky was under the weather. Plus, it was like 50 degrees outside. Wind chill to 45, which they kept on reiterating throughout the night because it was brick. So I heard. Because listen, it was brick in New York. So I can imagine it was brick in Philly. Out there in the football stadium for 4 hours, unless you was lathered up, you was feeling every bit of that cold. I'm surprised we didn't get more headlight sightings. Just saying. Listen, it's 2024. They got better technology because I was watching New York Undercover, and every time which guard Moreno came on screen, it was like, is it cold in there? I don't know. Hello. Listen. I don't know. But yeah. They kept on reiterating how which guard the weather was taking the factor. Becky was under the weather, but the story of the match was Rhea effectively had Becky's number. Sorry. She had Becky's number. Due to scouting, due to experience, due to her just being able to manhandle the man. She counted the manhandle slam. Becky counted the prism lock. Or matter of fact, she attempted to count the prism lock, in which Rhea added a new tweak to the prism lock and did and combined it with a body scissor, which forced Becky to valiantly reach the rope. And it was just clear to me that Rhea was not going to be denied. I mean, plus, she got the live band intro. The only people that have gotten the live band intro that failed. Well, no. The people that get the live band intro always win, but no, my friend. WrestleMania 17. First appearance of Motorhead. Triple H lost. WrestleMania 30. Bray Wyatt had his band, had the band play him out. Infamously, he lost. I believe didn't Randy Orton get a band play him out? I hear voices in my head. Yeah, he lost. Shoot. How many times did John Cena have something play him out and his ass lost? I think he did it in WrestleMania 30. No, 27. You know, he had to band or something like that. Yeah, he lost. So Rhea having that, but being so happy, so joyous about that, once again gave me a little insight that, yeah, she was going to win. Now, the match was good. Rhea's showing her power, and Becky showed her guile. If there was any out, it's that Becky was announced to having being ill and on top of the climbing weather. That's her out. Now, I don't think this is a one-off, because if you look at the rest of the division, who else is ready? Matter of fact, I'm going to answer my own question. Who else is ready to challenge or step up to Rhea? A glaring omission of the card from the Raw roster. And that's Liv Morgan. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. In years past, I probably wouldn't be a proponent to this, but I think Liv should be the one to take it off of Rhea. Because, in reality, that story is a year long. Rhea put out Liv, not once, but she turned on her, and then she put out of action. Liv has been on a revenge tour. Liv has more equity in her bank for revenge than Becky. Becky was just like, don't talk about my daughter. And my thing is, technically, she didn't really talk about your daughter. She just said, your daughter gonna call her mommy. I mean, like, shit. You call yourself the man. She needs somebody to call her mama, right? Just saying, that was a little bit overreacting. Now, like I said, who's next for Rhea? Will there be a rematch? Yeah, I'm quite sure there's going to be a rematch on Backlash, and Becky's going to take the once again. Because as much as I can see Becky winning, there's no story for Becky to win. It's at least not on Raw, except for the fact that that's the one championship that technically she hasn't held. She went down to NXT, won that championship because she never had a chance to win the NXT championship. There's no reason. There's nothing left for her to do, except maybe there's a draft coming up, and maybe she gets drafted over to SmackDown. There's going to have to be some type of mixture, some type of shuffling of the deck with the two rosters, because SmackDown's women division is stacked. Raw's women division, and I was talking to my son Chef Mix the other day, and I'm like, all right, you got Becky, you got Rhea, you got Liv, you got Nia. Who else is there? Shayna? Eh. Zoe Stark? Yeah, all right. Indy Hartwell? Yeah. Ivy Now? Candice LeRae? There's a lot of just parts there. SmackDown, you have Bianca, you have Naomi, you have Jade, who those three we'll talk about very soon. You have Tiffy. You have Io. You have Becky. Bayley. You have Asuka, Kyrie, Dakota. Shoot, if you want to go down, you got Zelina. You got Mee Chin. That's 11 right there that you can put in a championship picture and they don't look crazy. That's 11 to 4. The scales of justice are way, way out of whack. But what's more importantly, what's next for Becky? If she stays on Raw. I mean, she's literally in a world of her own. They were promoting this match before she even had the match officially, which is some bullshit. And tell you the truth, if I was Nia and I was Liv, storyline-wise, I would feel a way just like they have felt a way. Like, why is she the chosen one? She hasn't had a championship in the last 2 years. Just saying. And last but not least, is it me or why is she still the man? Why? Because she says she's still the man? There's nothing in her character, really, that portrays her to still be the man. It's like a mixture of her the man attitude with big time Beck's fashion sense. And tell you the truth, I know a lot of people didn't like the heel turn, didn't like the heel run. I think she was actually doing some of her best in-ring work as big time Beck's, because she was allowed to show vulnerability. She was allowed to be the chicken shit and sometimes the man makes her have to portray such a braggadocious role that I think it takes away from what she is at this part of her career, this part of her run. And that's probably why you have a lot of lukewarm response. Also, it's one of those things that a moment in time, 2018, when she became the man, there was so many things in play. The image of her standing there defiant and bloodied. The fact that she overcame all the odds to not only keep herself in the main event picture, but put herself in the main event of WrestleMania, the first women's main event in history. And all that led to what we became to know her for. But that time is 4 years ago at the zenith. She had to leave. She was preparing a family. And that's no knock to her. But unfortunately, at times like that, when your momentum is up here and then there's a break, sometimes it doesn't get back. And sometimes you're trying so many things to try to get that spark that you kind of extinguish whatever flame you might have left over and over and over again until it's gone. Now, the next match is the six-way tag team title ladder match in which they effectively split the tag belts back to Raw Tag Team Champions and SmackDown Tag Team Champions. The way the match was set up was the match was not over until both sets of belts were retrieved. And once you saw the way it was set up, it was on two different pedestals, two different hooks. So right then and there, you knew they wanted to split the titles. Now, I'm not going to stay too long on these matches because the next couple matches were what they were. You know, I'll give you the highlights. The highlights of this match to me was the following. The DIY cosplay was funny as hell to me. Like, matter of fact, before I get into that, as you can see on your screen, and if you're listening on audio, Grayson Waller, Austin Theory, are your new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And The Miz and R-Truth, a.k.a. Awesome Truth, are your new Raw Tag Team Champions. Not only that, R-Truth gets his first victory at WrestleMania in his career. Not only that, R-Truth gets his first legitimate title. I'm not talking about this 24/7 title. His first legitimate title in his on and off 25-year career in WWE. Like, I'm not going to belittle the accomplishment, but this was like a lifetime achievement award for R-Truth. Now, as I was saying, the DIY, the Gargano and Ciampa cosplay as DX was funny as hell to me. Due to, over the last couple weeks, R-Truth mistaking them for Triple H and Shawn Michaels, mistaking DIY for DX, and he called them Regeneration X, which was crazy. Like, how you think about that? So they actually came down. The entrance, they came down dressed as the Cerebral Assassin and the Heartbreak Kid. They even did the heartbreak. They even did the super kick into the pedigree. It was hilarious. Like, this match had its high spots, but this match had comedy spots also. So yeah, it was funny as hell. R-Truth waiting for a hot tag in a ladder match was hysterical, as was him going for the pin once he came in and did the five moves of doom of his idol John Cena, who he's 5 years older than, but that's neither here nor there. That's an ongoing joke. The Judgment Day's Damian Priest was dominant in spurts, but this loss probably was best for him because it frees him up for a possible cash-in that didn't happen last night, even though Seth Rollins was ready for the taking. Will it happen tonight? I don't know. We'll talk about that at the very end. The New Day, showing an aggressiveness that they haven't shown in a while, but actually an aggressiveness that they've shown since their rivalry with Imperium was refreshing to say the least, but nobody thought they was winning. Theory and Waller winning the SmackDown tag team belts makes sense, but them being completely content when they won the SmackDown belts was kind of befuddling to me. Because the match was still going on. They could have been undisputed champs themselves, but they were like, look, we got our championship belts. We good. And that was weird, but it was what it was. Miz and Truth, like I said, winning their tag team belts, that was expected due to the rivalry that they had with the Judgment Day, due to R-Truth being excommunicated, as Michael Cole said, from the Judgment Day. So that was to be expected. And I thought, if anything, I thought it would have been, I think this was best for it to happen this way instead of a one on a one-on-one or a two-on-two match between Awesome Truth and the Judgment Day, because it allowed more people to get on the card. And I think they should have struck while the iron was a little bit hotter. But it was still remnants of that, so you can kind of parlay that there. I don't see a long reign for the Miz and R-Truth, but, you know, it was one of those very heartwarming stories that started off. Well, heartwarming story for those who know, and for those who enjoy the antics of one R-Truth. Now, I'm not going to lie, this match was okay. I know I said LWO versus Legado del Fantasma, but in reality it was Rey Mysterio and Andrade teaming up against the team of Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. And this match was pretty much paint by the numbers. You had your spots. Andrade looked great. Andrade looked engaged. Andrade looked like, you know what? Okay, I wasn't maybe used to my optimum potential, but, you know, Paul is back in charge. I got the cheat code with Charlotte, and I know I'm going to be put to good use. And you can tell that he's been working on his English, so he'll be able to cut promos more on his own. And him reuniting potentially on a full-time basis with Zelina Vega. It's nothing but a positive. Santos Escobar being in that position on a WrestleMania card, main card, was a plus. And, you know, he's going to show it's going to be nothing but blue skies ahead. And Dominic just, you know, heat magnet extraordinaire. I don't know where he goes, because you can see the cracks forming in Judgment Day. He's going to always be a shit-eating grin heel. So that's going to be interesting, or where they're going to pivot him off to next, because I don't see this continuing. The interaction with Lane Johnson and Jason Kelsey of the Philadelphia Eagles was just to get a pop. You know, it was very harmless, and it was okay. You know, it made me think that this match, the way this match was laid out, was more to put Andrade over going forward than any story with Dominic and his pops. If anything, I think the story going forward is going to be maybe Andrade against Santos. Those should be bangers. Andrade against Dominic, and that would lead to more interaction with Santos because they're on different brands. But even though, like I said, Santos took the pin, like I said, being in that position was a plus in itself. And everybody knows that Carlito's going to turn. I don't know, because Carlito, when you look at that group, the LWO, it looks like one of these things just doesn't belong here. One of these things just isn't the same. One of these things just doesn't belong here. Now it's time to play our game. It's time to play our game. And I don't see Carlito even joining Legado. Maybe just Carlito just signed. He finishes out his year. He does a turn and he's gone. Because, I mean, I got what they were getting at by bringing him back. But, I mean, has it really changed since the last? Only thing that's changed is his physique. His mode is still the same. So, I don't know. Short but sweet. Short and sweet. Because, like I said, it was what it was. It was a feel-good moment. Next on the docket was Jimmy versus Jay. The battles of the
the battle of the Usos, the battle of Yeet versus No Yeet, Yeet versus No Yeet. And I'm not going to lie, it's another thing that me and Brad commented on. The crowd was way more subdued than you would have thought. Was it because of the build? Perhaps. Because you think about it, the crescendo of this build between the two brothers was last summer. SummerSlam, to be exact. And it's not like both of them have not been on your TV screen. Jimmy cost Jay the Universal title at SummerSlam. Jimmy cost Jay the chance to be the tribal chief. Jimmy turned on Jay. And his rationale was, I was saving you from yourself. I was saving you because the power of the tribal chief would have corrupted my brother. And that would have been all well and good if Jimmy didn't turn around and continue to be an underling to the tribal chief and his younger brother. Because in that threesome, he is clearly number three. Also, Jay left SmackDown. Remember, deuces, ooses. And he went to Raw, and he's made a name of himself. He's won a tag team championship by himself. Well, yeah, without his brother. And Jimmy said that in the build of, listen, am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? You can do nothing. I don't want you to do anything without me. You left me. You left me. And since you left me, I'm going to make sure that you don't achieve nothing without me because I'm the older brother. Once again, maybe that would have given it more impact if Jimmy might have achieved anything on his own. Maybe that would have been given more impact if they would have had a little bit more interaction. But I understand the reason why they kept him away was because you wanted to save it for now. But that was the gift and the curse. The interaction during the Royal Rumble didn't get that pop. And I was like, whoa. You would have thought. Or maybe, just maybe, and this tends to be the case, the only time I don't believe it was the case was in the Owen versus Brett feud, that you could kind of tell this there was no real animosity. I'm not saying there was real animosity with Brett and Owen, but the way they portrayed that, it was like Owen hated Brett with a passion. Going back years ago with the Hardy versus Hardy, that just never got off the ground because you could just see they were seemed like they were going through the motions. This one, they tried. But like I said, the crowd was subdued. I was thinking maybe it was the build. Maybe it was the fact that the cold was starting to get to the crowd. That was proven wrong later. Maybe this was like hour, who knows? But hour two of the show, but hour four of just the get-together. Remember, the kickoff was 2 hours. You know, the fact that they beat Jimmy like a drum over the last couple months hasn't helped. Like, there's definitely a discrepancy between the star power of the two brothers. One common refrain, once again, that was reiterated during this match was the cold weather. I thought that it was partially because the reason for the lack of energy was that, but I was proven wrong. But to me, what really messed up the momentum, at least for Jay, like I said in my Sprinkle of Salt a couple of days ago, I attended the Barclays Center, the Raw before WrestleMania, and I was fully intent. Just me, Oos. Day one. Just me, Oos. Day one. Didn't get a chance to do that because all he had was a run-in. Not only that, last night, they had Lil Wayne. Now, maybe I'm mistaken, but then Lil Wayne said that he was going to debut a song at WrestleMania. A Millie, a song that's 17 years old. It's not a new song. Not only that, that's not a... His voice sounded off because I guess no auto-tune, because that song was auto-tune. A milli. But also, because you didn't need Lil Wayne to hype up Jey Uso's entrance. His entrance is a vibe. It's just me, Oos. Day one. It's just me, Oos. Day one. So, him doing ad-libs, yeah, me, just you. I'm like, if you don't shut your gremlin ass up, took me all out. I was like, yo, I feel like I was in the stands. I was just like, this motherfucker. It was almost as cringeworthy as having Meek Mill in the introductions, in the introductory video of WrestleMania, especially with the situation and the scuttlebutt revolving around Meek Mill. Yeah, daddy. Yeah, you took it like a pro, daddy. I don't know. Just me. But yeah, Lil Wayne just messed up the moment for me. His ad-libs wasn't needed at all and took the momentum out. The match itself was what you expect. Lots of kicks, lots of Samoan drops. The key moment for me was when Jimmy, after getting his ass whooped, pleaded for mercy and wanted to apologize. Jay, being the fact that so hard a guy he is, because at the end of the day, all he wants is his family together. That's the one thing. All he wants is his family together. And that has to be said. So, you know, he let his guard down. Of course, it was a ruse. And it briefly allowed Jimmy to gain the upper hand till Jay knocked the yeet out his ass and got the win. Is this a one-off? I don't know. Part of me wants them to run it back and really show what they're capable of. But on the other hand, maybe this is one of those bucket list items of, yo, we went from pre-show to main event together to wrestling each other. We're good. Because everybody knows with a fear of foul that they truly love each other. So, yeah. Not much to be said with that. But a major caveat is this. Fear of foul. Damage control isn't as over as you would think. Bayley, you know, the forgotten one in this build, you know, the forgotten one that's actually going for a championship, which I wholeheartedly believe that she's going to win. She better win the way she's been the invisible woman in this lead up, gave them the reaction they were getting. As much as they might, and I'm talking about Dakota, Oscar, Kyrie, as much as they might, or more specifically, Oscar could go in the ring, it's crickets out there. Like, remove EO from the equation and it gets worse. The star power was definitely on the side of the faces. Jade having a spotlight on her and not shrinking was wonderful. Naomi returning to the spot was a great moment in itself. And Bianca, while not seeming to have the spotlight that she's accustomed to on WrestleMania stage, didn't take a back seat or step down this year, and that's great. Like, That's how much confidence that Bianca has in herself and the company that has in her to use her as a jumping off point to smoothly introduce Jade while still being on the main card. Would it have been a better match one-on-one with Tiffany Stratton? Perhaps. But the way, but this way, it strengthens the whole division going forward. And that's what I mentioned before when it comes to the two divisions. Now, I'm going to speak about this match. I'm not going to speak about the match. I'm going to speak about the participants of this match. Jade Cargill oozes star. The star aura just oozes off her. Bianca's confidence in, and she said so in the press conference, that when they, her and Jade had conversations before, I think either before Jade jumped over, I mean, I shouldn't say jump, but before Jade came to the WWE, and once Jade officially signed. And pretty much they had a conversation of, look, I'm welcoming you with open arms because I feel that the platform, what's meant for me is meant for me. What's meant for you is meant for you. You getting a spot does not diminish me, does not diminish my shine. Like, it's been this notion for all these years, and Naomi even mentioned it when she started way back when, that for years it was only Alicia Fox. It's only Alicia Fox. She was the only black woman on the roster, damn near. If, matter of fact, not even damn near. She was the only black woman on the roster. Then it was Naomi. And Bianca was like, for all these years, it's always been like, all right, we can only have one. Or if we have one, that person's special. And I took it, people might try to parse the words, like why she's trying to generalize this. No, what she was saying was, she believes that things have evolved enough that we can look at each other as women, as we're doing the damn thing, if not as, oh, these black women are doing the damn thing. You look at them, you could tell they're black. You know they're black women. Yeah, they're black strong women. They're black, beautiful, strong black women. That's taking back seats to no one. And they have such a, like I said, such an air of confidence amongst themselves that it's like, look, I'm gonna let my work speak for itself. There's no need, and I will not be a charity case. And you're not gonna think of me as such. You're not gonna look at me as such. I'm not gonna give you an excuse to even think or look at me as such. And similar to the New Day, and I'll say the New Day off screen, because there was a lot of instances when they first got together that I guess throughout their existence, their popularity allowed them to break the stereotypes that they were actually being pigeonholed in initially. And I believe that this grouping, if it's not so much a faction, but just this grouping of Naomi, Bianca, and Jade will do the same thing on the female side of, we can be us. We don't have to be a character. We can speak in our own voice. We can actually dig into our own experiences as black women, in the black culture, instead of it being dictated to us. If you think of it on the other side, you have Kyrie, Asuka, and Io. Not in this match, but the Asian contingent. What they've done with this new regime, or the Triple H regime, is they haven't pigeonholed, all right, you're Asian, you have to act goofy. You're Asian and can't speak English, guess what? We're going to force you to speak English, or you're just going to be a mute. They've actually played into their strengths. the Kabuki Warriors, that name, I'm quite sure, was meant to be a slight. Asuka is just Asuka. But you're seeing more of a serious side with Io getting the chance to speak her words and having the subtitles. So therefore, she can actually display the emotion of that her words mean, instead of having to concentrate so much of having to speak on a mic in front of a crowd that sometimes is not forgiving of, yo, listen, take your time. Take your time. Like, we can go back to the Hall of Fame, Bull Nakano. Part of that speech made me feel uncomfortable, because I'm like, this is the reason at times that the Hall of Fame shouldn't be in front of the regular public, the regular wrestling fan, because a lot of wrestling fans are fucking idiots. A lot of wrestling fans are ignorant. A lot of wrestling fans are fucking dumb, to be blunt. But yeah, this match went a long way to allowing the next generation, or even this generation, to know that they can do it. They will be allowed to do it in their own voice, in their own way, in their own unique style. And to me, that was the most important part that I took from this match. You know, listen, Jay won. Jay looked great. Bianca looked phenomenal. Naomi did wonderful. But that was not the important part. If y'all have a chance, please check out the post WrestleMania press conference and check out the segment with Jay, Bianca, and Naomi, and just the words that they have, the words of wisdom, the words of inspiration that came out their mouth and was on that platform, is I can't even do it justice. So that's why I'm referring y'all to there. The last match, and tell you the truth, if I was thinking about it, I would have given my thoughts right after the main event, because this was main event worthy in itself, especially the story. Sami Zayn defeated Gunther for the IC title and ends a historic reign by Gunther, the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time, going on over 600 days. The exact amount of days is kind of discerning to me. It just is. Part of me is like, darn, if y'all paid attention, could y'all not put this on, like, couldn't y'all put this on WrestleMania Sunday so it would have been 667 days? But because I just don't feel like even repeating those three numbers. The crowd was trending toward dead before this match. And I said in my group chat, matter of fact, I said in my conversation with Mr. Winchester that Sammy would bring them back. And he agreed. He agreed that they would bring him back with the absolute brutalization of Sami Zayn. And he was correct. Sammy and Gunther had a great match. The family aspect added to the drama. Sammy talking to his son, talking to his wife on his way to the ring, giving his son a kiss, not wanting his son to suffer the same fate as Chad Gable's daughter, and cry at the fact that his daddy couldn't get the job done. Chad Gable giving him words of advice and remaining in the back and just said, look, you just owe me that solid. But no, you could do this. You got this. You go do it on your own. You got it. I got faith in you. And then last but not least, Kevin Owens right at the gorilla position, giving him that last bit of pep talk. It was great. It was great. Sammy's wife was front row. The announcers telling Sammy to stay down when he was getting his ass whooped. Gunther taunting his wife, power bombs galore, This was Rocky versus Drago vibes all the way. Sammy never said die attitude. Two splashes from the top. Gunther told his wife to throw in the towel. Now, when he went for the third one, him mocking Sammy's wife led to Sammy pulling the El Generico out and giving him a brain buster off the top. Haluva kicks to win and end Gunther's record reign. I ain't gonna lie. I am not gonna lie because I am so secure of my manhood. It actually put me in tears. I mean, a tear didn't drop, but I teared up. I teared up. Yes, I did. It was a hell of an emotional ride. Great match. And think about this. Think about this. Historical fact. 3 years ago, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens decided to re-sign with WWE. And this is before we had any inclination that Vince McMahon was going to let go and not even let go, be forced out. So pretty much, this is still under the reign of Vince McMahon. A lot of people, a lot of pundits, you know, thought that it was a no-brainer for KO and Sammy to go to AEW. Because, you know, like, they've done all they could do. They've slotted a certain position. You know, you could, you know, this perfect opportunity to get the bag. And guess what? They actually got the bag from WWE. Not only did they get the bag from WWE, they got opportunity upon opportunity upon opportunity. Think about it. In the last 3 years of WrestleMania, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens has done the following. 2022, Sami Zayn had a celebrity match with the guys from Jackass. Johnny Knoxville. Yeah, he took the loss, but that was mainstream exposure. And if you think about it, him having that exposure, even though the bloodline thing was never planned, still, him having that exposure did not hurt that situation. Darn. Oh, don't this look a little like it's... Anyway. Kevin Owens main evented night one of that WrestleMania, WrestleMania 38. And not only did he main event night one, you know who he main evented night one with? The returning Rattlesnake, Texas Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Stone Cold's first match in 19 years. Everybody and their mother would dream match with fantasy book. Stone Cold versus CM Punk. Stone Cold versus Brock. Stone Cold versus Roman. Stone Cold versus this. Who did Stone Cold come back to wrestle? Kevin Owens. Last year, they main evented night one. So that's Kevin Owens' second back-to-back main events. In a tag team match in which they teamed together to beat the Usos for the undisputed tag team championships and ended the record long reign of the Usos. And then this year, so far, Sammy semi-main events and ends Gunther's record-breaking IC title reign. Truly a WrestleMania moment. In one of these interviews, I can't remember where, but Kevin Owens said that he's at a point in his career, a point in his life, that he's accomplished so much that, like this, especially once he main evented with Stone Cold, there's nothing else to do but go down. Not saying he wants to go down, but it's like, all right, the pressure's off. Look, there's nothing I can accomplish that can ever top that moment. And then to a certain degree, he topped it the following year by winning and main eventing with his best friend, his brother, without blood. Their friendship is very touching. It reminds me so much. And I just, friendships like that are very rare. They're very rare. And to see that, it just kind of emanates off the screen. Just permeates off the screen. And I think that was the part that touched me. Yeah, the family stuff, the Rocky IV. You can win! Yeah, all that was gravy, but yeah, it was a great ending. So with that being said, that brings us to the end of this edition of the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph podcast. I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all for making me and this here podcast the one y'all choose to view and the one y'all choose to listen to. Stay tuned for part two, or should I say episode 49.5, dropping tomorrow afternoon. Monday afternoon, to be exact. Recapping tonight's activities of WrestleMania. I didn't expect to go this long, but yeah, y'all know. Anytime I talk about, yeah, it ain't gonna be an hour. Yeah, I'm gonna get in and get out. Yeah, I'm gonna do this, I'm going that. Guess what?
Fuck that!
Clear, guys.
Fuck that! You shut your mouth. Doesn't mean that the shit stops. The rock doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, so I keep on going and going and going and going and going, like the Energizer Bunny. So, yeah. Please check it out. It's gonna be amazing. Shoot, if night two, outshines night one, then guess what? 49.5 will outshine 49. You're damn Skippy. Before I get out of here, you know, of course, check out the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph podcast, available on the following platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music, amongst others. New episodes drop each and every Wednesday on all streaming platforms wherever podcasts are available. If you catch me on the social medias, catch me on X at Mike Steffens _. Catch me on the gram at _MikeSteph. And catch me on TikTok at Mike Steph single. That's right, _. And guess what? If y'all want to give me some bread, yeah, that's right. Y'all want to give me some bread to fill up this cup, catch me on Cash App, $ Donnie Mike. Yeah, I ain't playing. $ Donnie Mike. Cash at me. Fuck it. I can't do a Patreon yet, but y'all could throw some coins in my way. Y'all could fill this cup with some coins. I'm not begging. I'm just putting that information out there. If y'all choose to indulge and drop some coins in there, guess what? It'll be greatly appreciated. Guess what? I might actually invest it into 1080p instead of this cheap. No, I won't say cheap, but instead of this 720p that I'm currently on, because guess what? I might be in the red, but I'm not going to bankruptcy because of y'all motherfuckers. See? $ Donnie Mike on Cash App. And by all means, check out the new blog, mikesteph.org.wordpress.com, for everything that I need to spew that I don't feel like talking about. I feel like writing. And guess what? My writing is way better than my verbal. That's almost like saying my stroke game is way better than my munch game. But guess what? I'll be lying, because both of them are on equal par. That's right. I can get steffy time with the stick, and I can get steffy time with the tongue. No. Main Event K said hi. Darn it, that was so awkward. So I'm gonna get out of here. I'll catch y'all tomorrow. Until tomorrow. Goodbye.
Bye.